The following is an excerpt from the Science Podcast. To hear the whole show, visit www.sciencemag.org and click on Science Podcast.
Finally today, David Grimm, the online news editor of Science, is here to bring us up to date on some recent stories from our daily news site. First, Dave, something about the very slow cooling of the Earth over the last 4.5 billion years.
That's right, Stuart. You might be hard to imagine or think about it, but despite the fact that Earth is about 4.5 billion years old, it is still cooling off. And as you may know, Stuart, the Earth formed in a very hot event. It coalesced from this hot ball of gas, dust, and other materials. Very early in Earth's history, it was very much a molten, hot world. But despite the fact that it's been cooling off for so long, for billions and billions of years, it still has about half of its original heat, according to this new study.
And how did they figure that out?
Well, the study was conducted deep inside a Japanese mountain, and apparently you have to go way down deep to measure what's called the radiogenic heat produced by Earth. So there's two main types of heat that Earth produces. First, that original primordial heat from its formation, but there's also this radiogenic heat, which is basically the heat produced when isotopes decay. And this is a lot of heat too, but it's not heat directly linked to the formation of the planet. And this natural radioactivity produces neutrinos as a byproduct. And by going deep into the Earth, the researchers were able to try to eliminate a lot of the background sources of neutrinos, like nuclear power plants and other emitters of neutrinos. Basically, by doing all this, they found that about 111 of the neutrinos they measured were associated with natural radioactivity within Earth. And by doing a bunch of other calculations, they basically came to the conclusion that all the natural radioactivity on Earth generates about 20 terawatts of heat. And what that adds up to is about 54% of the heat that's flowing through your surface comes from this radioactive decay, which means 46%, the leftover, is this original heat. So that means just about half, a little under half, of the heat that Earth produces is still left over from all of these formation events that happened billions and billions of years ago.
Isn't this something that was already known, though? This is sounding awfully familiar.
It actually was known before, but the studies that had been done before were really based on inferences. Researchers had done analysis of meteorites and other sort of more secondary sources to get at this figure. This is really the first direct measurement of this background radiation. And what's really interesting about it, just besides knowing that, hey, Earth still has a lot of heat left in it, is a lot of this internal heat is actually what guides the plate tectonics, the volcanic activity of our planet. So by studying how fast Earth loses heat, scientists can study a lot of geological processes in the past and even extrapolate into the future. And finally, if you're wondering when Earth may eventually totally become cold.
It was at the top of my mind.
The researchers say that according to their calculations, the planet is cooling about 100 degrees every 1 billion years. Now, that may not sound like a lot, but if you calculate forward a bit, it means that in a few billion years from now, Earth will essentially be a cold, dead planet. So
Something to look forward to. And next, a tale of intrigue in the elephant seal harem.
Right, Stuart. This next story is all about the Beachmaster system in elephant seals. And basically what this system is elephant seal males, especially the dominant males, they're these really big hulking guys, and they are very territorial, very aggressive, very defensive. And they have these giant harems of females on a beach, sometimes hundreds of females that they look over, and they jealously guard these females. So if any other male comes on the beach, they fight them. The battles can be very bloody. And biologists have often pointed to this as a classic example of what's called polygyny in the animal kingdom. And that basically means one male mating with lots and lots of other females, and all those females only mate with that one male. Well, according to this new study, this system may not be as polygynous as researchers had suspected.
not as polygynous, meaning that the females are indulging in a little hanky-panky here?
Exactly. The females are indulging in a little extracurricular hanky-panky. The way the researchers found out about this is they actually tagged a group of females, and what they found was that although the females tend to spend a lot of their lives at the beach, they're actually spending a lot of time also in the open water. They usually come back to the beach about once a year, ostensibly to give birth and also to mate with this dominant male. But a lot of times when they show up pregnant, which means that they've been...
Which surprises the beach master.
Exactly. And it means that the females are having sex with the non-dominant males that are out in the open ocean or out elsewhere. And it really sort of challenges this idea that these females are sort of loyal to this one male. The reason some scientists thought this originally is they sort of went into this with a very male-biased approach to the research, the idea that, well, of course, a man is going to have total control over females and is going to be able to sort of dictate their every moves. And they would have said, well, the females get something out of it too, because even though they only get a mate with one male, that male is sort of providing them protection, and it's sort of a system that works out for everybody. But in this new idea, the fact that a lot of these females are going out and having these quote-unquote extramarital affairs means that the females actually have a lot more choice than the scientists have been giving them credit for. And yes, they may get some protection from this male, and that may be why they come back to this beach year after year to be with him. But by going out into the open ocean, they can exert a lot more choice in terms of who they mate with. And so they're sort of getting the best of both worlds. They're getting the protection, but they're also getting a lot more mate choice than scientists had previously believed.
And finally, this one really seems wild. A cloaking device not for hiding an object in space, but for hiding an event in time.
Right. Well, imagine this scenario, Stuart. A robber breaks into a bank, steals all the money from the safe, then returns home and activates a device that basically masks his entire foray into the bank. So that as far as the people in the bank know, the money just magically disappeared. The robber was never there, but all of a sudden the money is gone.
Sounds like it would help the elephant seals.
It could, very much could. This idea is called a time cloak. The idea that you could, as you said, Stuart, take a moment in time rather than an object and make it disappear. Now, the scenario I just described is a long way from reality, but researchers have actually made an important first step into turning such a time cloak into reality. And the experiment they set up involves a laser beam. And the basic idea, what they were trying to do with this laser beam is to create a gap in the beam. So they would see that gap in the beam, but then find a way to retroactively make that gap disappear so that any other observer looking at the beam would just sort of see the continuous laser beam as if there had been no gap.
Well, how do you open a gap in a beam of light like that?
Well, the researchers created what they call a time lens, which is basically a device that can shift the frequency of the light. And basically, at a particular moment, they shift the frequency of the light higher and then suddenly lower. This is the frequency of the light in the laser beam. Then they send this, quote-unquote, frequency-modulated light through an optical fiber that's designed so that some of the wavelengths of light are sped up and travel faster than other wavelengths. And as one of these sets of wavelengths races ahead of the other set, a gap opens up between the beams. So that's how you get your gap. Now here's how you get your cloaking. After the light is passed through the spot where the hidden event will occur, where they want to sort of mask this gap in the beam, the experimenters reverse the process. They run the light through a fiber in which the wavelengths have been sped up and slowed down, and those that have been slowed down are sped up, so the gap essentially closes. Now, this all sounds very complicated, but the essential effect is to retroactively erase that gap in the beam. So again, an observer that was looking at that beam would just see a continuous beam, whereas the researchers know that they had created a gap and then made it disappear.
So how long of a gap are we actually talking about?
Well,
here?
We're not talking about a very long gap here. In fact, they hid an event that lasted 15 trillionths of a second, not nearly long enough to rob a bank. So we're a long way from the next Ocean's 11 movie where a bank robber employs this type of technology. But again, it is an important proof of concept. It's important first step. The researchers think that as they keep on working on this, they may be able to eventually hide an event that lasts up to 110 billionths of a second. So
that's progress.
Still very much the blink of an eye, but definitely getting farther along. And of course, as this has developed on down the line, perhaps you could eventually get a device that could mask an event that takes place over a much longer span of time, robbing a bank or perhaps erasing an embarrassing faux pas earlier in the day. You're going to have to wait a while for that to happen, but researchers are on their way.
They're on the trail.
They're on the trail.
Nice to know they're working on the important things. Okay, Dave, what else are you looking into for the news site this week?
Well, Stuart, for Science Now, we've got a story about what it may have been like for medieval knights to battle with armor. Researchers actually put a man in a suit of armor and made him run on a treadmill to see how much energy it actually takes to walk around with a suit of armor. So that's a fun story we're doing. Also, another fun story about rock, paper, scissors and the psychology behind this child's game. On Science Insider, Science's policy blog, we've got a story about the new Indian science minister and the impact that person may have on science in the country. Also, a story about plutonium production, what's going on with that in the U.S. and what the impact of that is on various scientific experiments. And finally, for Science Live, our weekly chat on the hottest topics in science, this week's Science Alive is about the science of mummies. What are mummies telling us about diseases in the past and how those diseases are affecting us right now and also in the future? So be sure to check out all these stories on the site.
David Grimm is the online news editor of Science. You can check out the latest science news and the policy blog Science Insider at news.sciencemag.org, where you can also join a live chat, Science Live, on the hottest science topics every Thursday at 3 p.m. U.S. Eastern Time.